Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Ethan Sun, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. And I will tell you yet again, I have another former teammate of mine on this show. Now, y'all heard from Phil McKenzie about 2 weeks ago, another young man that came after me in the team. I was a couple of years ahead of him. And I think my guest today came in with him in his class. I'm pretty sure that's right, but he will tell us whether or not I'm right or wrong. But I'll tell you, the young man that I'm interviewing today, although he's a former teammate, he's a young man that I've watched over the years, a cross-country runner, someone who came in with a passion for running, a passion for doing the right thing, a passion for excelling. And as I sit back and watch his career right now, he's now an author. He is I call him a crackerjack of a coach. And I was reminded of it when I got his bio today, because I had lost track of it. We keep up infrequently, but I see what he's doing and I see the lives that he's changing with the young people that he touches, the young people that he coaches, and now to see him starting out doing his thing in such a big way, it's a blessing. And these are the types of stories that we always want to have on this podcast, especially from the sentiments shared by all of you that tune in every week. So ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, all right, welcome to the podcast this week, my good friend, former teammate, and coach extraordinaire, Mr. Desmond Dunham. Big Des, how are you, sir?
Hey, how are you? How are you, Hector? Hey, good to see you, man. Thanks for having me on here. I do appreciate the kudos that you gave me. And this is a warm feeling being connected with you once again. And I absolutely love what you're doing. And, you know, you had something to do with me getting that extra jolt that I needed to get out there and really step into the author world. And I do appreciate you of that. And, you know, you gave me a great read, some additional life lessons. And to be honest with you, a lot of things that you went through coming from Jamaica, getting to Howard's campus, where you knew that it wasn't an option to go back home without a degree. I kind of ended up at Howard the same way. My mother told me once she left me on the fifth floor of Drew Hall that you need to figure this out. Don't come back home without a degree. Matter of fact, I don't even come back home. And so, you always have had a fond memory in my heart. And that's why, you know, we can go years without speaking and then we connect and there's this instantaneous connection because, you play such an integral role in my life along with the other track bison and I'm forever grateful for that.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. You just don't never know. We just try to live this thing called life.
Yeah.
And if someone asks a question, you answer and hopefully it helps them along the way.
Yes,
but
sir.
Today's podcast is about you. It's about
you. I came in a year after you and I did a 5-year special. All right. Yep.
That's all right. But the key thing, you got it done. That's the key thing. So on this podcast, what we do is I don't ask a lot of questions. I ask one open-ended question to get us started. And then from there, based on your responses, before you know it, we would have ran the entire gamut of your career and how you got to where you are today. But this podcast is about inspirational thoughts, ideas. And man, I see your videos and what you're doing with these young kids. So I know this is going to be a great interview today. So let me ask you the question I ask every guest. Every guest is asked this question.
Go for it.
Who is Desmond Dunham? What grounds him, his early years growing up? What has shaped him to where he is today? And what drives Desmond Dunham today, starting from his early years in Gary, Indiana, coming all the way up?
Wow. You know, that sounds like such a simple question, but it could be very complex in many ways. And you know, that's part of this book that I just finished writing, Running Against the Odds. It'll be coming out later on this month. And that chronicles my journey from my childhood through my college days, all the way through my coaching years. And you know, within that first part of Running Against the Odds, it really focuses on the trials and tribulations that I had as a youngster. You know, I was born with a respiratory infection, and doctor put me into an incubator and put me behind a window. My mother couldn't hold me for my first week. And the doctor basically said, hey, if he can make it, you know, 24 to 48 hours, you know, he'll be okay. But the jury is still out, you know. And that kind of became a reflection of my entire life as a child and some other things. You know, I truly loved school initially, but then I also realized I had some challenges. I had a speech impediment where I was being pulled out of class, and then later to find out I had dyslexia. So school wasn't as fun for me as it should have been. Then, you know, I had a dad who was, you know, he was a Vietnam veteran, and, you know, he was carrying bodies from the battlefield. He was dealing with wounded. So needless to say, he came back home with PTSD and unfortunately, there was already this lack of support for mental health for our veterans, but even more so for our Black veterans in an all-Black city, Gary, Indiana at the time. And so he developed some demons where he became an alcoholic, and that trickled to my home where there was a fair amount of abuse towards my mother, a lot of mental and emotional abuse towards my siblings. And I didn't find out about some siblings until I was older. You got to pick up the book to hear the full story, it was a lot of challenges there coming up as a Black man in Gary, dealing with some things at home, and also, you know, dealt with just some of the systemic racism that we dealt with overall in Gary, where there was a lot of rezoning once the steel mills went down, a lot of rezoning. A lot of redlining, educational resources began to go down. And so we're seeing how they're drawing and condensing Gary to become this much smaller city with these lack of resources. And then all of these suburban cities, man, I mean, they had 10 times as many resources as we had. And so it wasn't until that I got to Howard where I realized some of my deficits. I had some strengths, but I also had some deficits as well. And I'm just very thankful that in high school, I had a high school track coach. So, you know, my story really picks up where, you know, I was cut from three school teams. I was a little scrawny guy, and I got cut from an elementary basketball team, middle school basketball team, and you won't believe this, but I got cut from a middle school cross country team as well. Wow. Here it was in high school. I ended up going out for the high school cross country team only because I was told you had to play football or run cross country in order to try out for basketball. And so I was 120 something as a freshman. I wasn't playing on anyone's football team. So, you know, and I remember when I first went out, I tried out for the, my coach called it a tryout because he says, hey, you're coming out pretty late into, you know, the summer training. We'll give you a shot. And that first day of practice, I ended up running an 8-mile run in 90 something degree weather. Now, I was a pretty fit kid, but man, I tell you, I still can feel the pain of that run to this day. But it was something special about that day and that first week of joining a cross-country team. It was very similar to what we experienced as track bison. My coach became my father figure. He also promoted this brotherhood, and those guys are still my brothers to this day. And so, you know, I just would not have imagined going out for cross country my freshman year in high school would change the entire trajectory of my life. And that's what fuels me as a coach to this day, why I want to change so many lives. And like you, I mean, leave my legacy. And my grandmother always said, you know, leave something better than you found it. And I want to leave this world better than when I found it, and inspires and change some lives.
Well, you know, you said something that's rather interesting, and I didn't know this backstory. So I'm definitely going to get the book. And before we close this interview, I want you to share the title and when it's going to come out and where folks can get it. And when we share this this episode, we'll make sure we promote that as well. But you shared something about your early years in your home life and your dad and your home. But it seems to me, and you mentioned grandma. See, I listened quite a bit. Grandma and mom. Yeah. So what were, and you've mentioned also siblings. So what was outside of that dynamic with your dad and living in Gary, what was family like?
You know, I would say that I was very, very blessed in terms of, you know, again, my mother used to work 24 to 28 hour shifts to make sure my sister was 1 year older. And then we found out about three other siblings later on in our life. But, you know, my mother just made the ultimate sacrifice to make sure food was on the table, that we had everything that we needed. And then I had an aunt who also lived with us at a particular time as well. I mean, it was all about family and community. And then my grandmother played a significant role. She was a second mother. And so, and a dad too. I mean, she didn't play. So if my mother couldn't come up to the school from me getting in trouble in school, my grandmother showed up, and man, I... You know, it was truly a village. And then I have this amazing extended family. I mean, we have family reunions of over 200 family members on my dad's side. And then we're well over 100 on my mother's side, the Wilson and Dunham families. And so we take family very seriously. So I have people who were chipping in, helping them pick up the slack, because they knew that, you know, unfortunately, my dad wasn't, you know, dependable, and some things happened that as a child that, you know, I should not have witnessed. And so they tried to balance that. And I would say that under the circumstances, I mean, they did a heck of a job. And I'm so appreciative of my extended family.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, you know, family is key to almost everything.
Yeah.
But ever since I've known you, you've been a disciplined person. I remember when we were running cross country, I won't call some of the names, but when we wanted to cut, you guys ran the whole thing. And I'm like, these youngsters are making us look bad. But that drive and that discipline and that tenacity, I see it in you today. Who would you say you got it from? Mom, grandmom, who?
I mean, well, 100% my mother. You know, it got to a point where, as I mentioned before, she worked 24 to 28 hour shifts. And it wasn't until one day where she worked one of those shifts and she fell asleep at the wheel. And this was my senior year in high school. And I'll be honest with you, when I was a senior in high school, I didn't have it figured out. I wish I could tell this story of how I, you know, was meeting with my college counselor when I was a sophomore. Matter of fact, my counselor in high school told me I need to take the ASVAB test, which was the military test. And nothing against going to the military. I appreciate what, you know, our troops do for us on every day. But it was almost this path was given to me to say that there was no other option. And I believed it, to be honest, I believed it. And it wasn't until my high school coach. So I would say that my high school coach played a close second, especially the time that he came into my life, because I wasn't as focused or as disciplined going into high school before I joined the cross country team. And so it was kind of my mother passed that baton to my high school coach, and he began to tell me, Desmond, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to college. You're going to do this. And he had it all mapped out, and I'm a sponge, and I respected him so much that I listened to him. And then when my aunt gave me a call who had a friend that worked at Howard, I was willing to listen, you know, and find out more about Howard. And you know, I'm like, man, this is a gold mine. And then I met with Coach Moultrie, and, you know, I mean, we were struggling as a distance program, especially in cross country. And so he felt like it was a blessing. And so he awarded me scholarship money to come on board. And you know, I was super excited about that. And I qualified for some other aid, and that was all she wrote. But, you know, a lot of people aspire to go to Howard, you know, from sophomore, junior, senior, maybe even earlier than that. We're trying to, you know, brainwash my kids now, but it doesn't work too well when you live in the same city.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't.
But, yeah, so it, you know, it was by the grace of God. And again, I mean, I was dealing with dyslexia and some challenges that I didn't really have identified and figured out. And again, you know, when you don't have the resources in the schools, you know, you're kind of dealing with having to figure some things out yourself. So, you know, it was a little bit of a struggle with the SAT initially. And then eventually I got this massive super score and this getting to Howard, man, changed my entire life. And as to who I am as a person, who I am as a Black man in America. And I just can't, you know, I can't even imagine life without, you know, being on campus with brothers like yourself and the professors that we had and just the community that we had from a cultural and academic standpoint. It was exactly what I needed. You know, mm-hmm. Howard really helped to build who I am. And that makes me appreciate everyone else, you know, as well. And so I'm super thankful for that.
So I want to spend some time on the Howard part, but let me ask you this. As I'm listening to you now, and I see the work that you do with so many young kids, Kids Elite, you're coaching St. John's and all of this. Do you think your coaching ability now and the way you're influencing young people of all different races, creeds, whatever, is a really interesting mix of students that you coach? Do you think what you went through was preparing you to do this in this stage in life?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and that's kind of what that is what the memoir is about. You know, it's the fact that I have been able to tell some stories of my challenges and how I overcame these challenges. And these become life lessons to a lot of my students, as well as my athletes. And they've said it over and over again, you know, Dunham, you need to write a book. And probably about 8 years ago, and I'm sure you had, you know, I mean, you're an inspiring figure. I'm sure many people told you the same thing before you wrote yours. And so when the pandemic hit, I mean, I'm like, all right, I'm spending time at home and you know, the family, we got tired of looking at each other. And I said, all right, let me just take this time to dive into writing this book. But yeah, there's a lot of stories that builds up and culminates into these lessons. And I realized that these are the lessons that is the foundation of my coaching. And where, mm-hmm. you know, and even my experiences with my high school coach, we called him Chief Roosevelt Pulliam, too. You know, so not only did I get one father figure as a coach, I got a second one, as you know, the late William P. Moultrie. And I mean, I couldn't ask for a better, you know, duel of coaches for high school and college. And so even those seeds that they planted in me, I just think it has become this formula. You know, somehow this algorithm has come together that where I'm able to now pour in my own personal experiences, my high school coach experience, William P. Moultrie's, you know, coaching and his lessons that he taught us. And now all of that is infused in my recipe, you know, those ingredients that makes me the coach that I am today. And I absolutely love it.
Yeah. So after Howard, but you know, Howard transformed pretty much all of us.
Yes.
We will all have the same story about going into Howard, not really knowing what, I didn't know what Howard was about, but I tell people all the time that that institution pretty much changed me quite a bit into the person I am today in terms of my thinking and my preparation for my vocation. But you matriculated through Howard, you did well, you did all you wanted to do, I would imagine. But did you go straight into coaching, or what happened after you left Howard?
All right. So that's a good question. So, well, you know, one thing was that I had a little turbulence when I was at Howard. I do. and I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, my running career was a bit wonky. And then I started off strong. And in the middle, I decided I wanted to pledge.
I remember.
And that really, you know, threw things for a loop. And that's one reason I felt like I needed to come back in my fifth year to just kind of reconcile things with some of the mistakes that I had made. I definitely felt like, you know, there were some things that I owed coach, I owed the team. And I'm very thankful I was able to come back for that fifth year and serve as the captain and you know, MVP and all, and you know, so it turned out to be a good story, but I made it a lot more difficult than what it had to be. It's what did you say, son? It's easy.
It's easy, son. Quit making things difficult.
Right. So finishing up my fifth year, I was also a resident assistant. And I picked up that extra gig when I had a little trouble and lost some of that scholarship money. And I went and volunteered at Gage Eckington Elementary School in that LaJoy Park area. And I took a few of my residents there. And so so basically we formulated this relationship with Gage. I went to grad school. And then that's where I started my master's in nutritional science at Howard as well. So then that's when I meet this young lady. Well, she was stalking me, but she did end up becoming my wife. And she became the operations side of us tutoring over at Gage. And what happened was Gage lost their funding for all of their special programs. So they didn't have any specials in terms of art, music, foreign language. So we went to expand what we call the Each One Teach One tutorial mentorship program. We had over 100 Howard students that ran the special programs over at Gage Eckington.
Wow.
And either they were a tutor or they were a mentor. We would bring the students to the Howard games, you know, and of course, I mean, they came to see the band and listen to the band. And so that was my first step into, I would say, a mentorship role that I absolutely, I mean, just loved. And so my second year in grad school, I actually picked up a volunteer coaching gig, which was at St. Gabriel's. And I just started to get embedded into the community. And then I fell in love with the you know, that first year as a volunteer coach. And I'm thinking, man, this is something special. Now, I went to grad school so that I could fulfill pre-medical school requirements. And so I ended up taking the MCAT. I didn't do too well the first couple of times, and then the third time. And this is real talk that, you know, my aunt, she dropped me $1,500 to take the Princeton review for the MCAT. So then after I have access to this standardized, you know, course, which Princeton Review and is one of the top, you know, preparation courses for, you know, your professional school tests. I ended up doing extremely well on the MCATs. So then that led me to, I had spent the summer before getting published in biomedical research. So I'm thinking, all right, I'm going this medical school route. And all of that just kind of got dismantled. And I make the long story short, I ended up just jumping over to the educational side. I still to this day don't know why. I was a physical science teacher at Archbishop Carroll my first year, teaching physics and chemistry to freshmen at the school. I was making about $17,000. And so I'm, you know, but it was just the pure passion of what I love to do. And I also felt like it was my purpose. Nothing had ever made me feel the way that I would feel when I would impact and change someone's life for the better. And here I am, you know, over two decades later, still loving, you know, what I do.
Yeah, your passion does shine through brightly in what you do. I did not know those transitions for you. And I, you know what I'm telling you? I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And when I see what you do today, I could see the seeds were planted and you just watered and fertilized them over the years. But the educational piece of it and you teaching and you coaching, how do you see yourself? If you were to look at your, I'm gonna hit you with three buckets, okay?
All right.
The first bucket is Desmond on his own, living life, growing up. The second bucket is your high school coach. The third bucket is Coach Moultrie. And I'm gonna add a fourth bucket.
Okay.
Our fourth bucket is trying to figure out what you wanna do with this. Out of those four buckets, which one do you think resonates with you the most? Or is it that they're all combined somehow on a journey that you're on?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of connective tissue between all four of those buckets. I mean, 100%. And, you know, the fourth bucket is pretty interesting because I mean, I can't say that I was truly intentional on everything. I mean, it's almost where you said that, you know, it was a lot of seeds and fertilizer that was put down. And this is the fourth bucket is what manifested from the first three buckets. And so, I mean, I'm very thankful for, you know, growing up in Gary, Indiana, in the community. And one thing I left off were my childhood friends. I mean, you know, Gary was the homicide capital of the U.S. During the 90s. I mean, and that's per capita. And so there was a lot of but that's what happens when the economy goes down. I mean, everything else goes up, drugs and crime and even, you know, homicides. And so So it's kind of a tale of two cities. You know, there was a lot of love and community there, but then there was also, you know, a lot of violence and gangs were rampant. And I'm thankful that running became my outlet, right where I would feel that I was the most vulnerable to potentially make some decisions that could have changed the course of my life the other way. It was actually running in my high school coach that got me on this path, that planted, you know, I mean, not just some seeds, but it anchored some roots for me for later on in life, and really got me on track. And so I'm forever thankful that running was an outlet, you know, for all the madness at home when my dad would come home and you know, he would have one of those days or nights. And it also just taught me so much about myself that it has made me a much more disciplined, a much more tougher, grittier, you know, and have this stick-to-itiveness that you know, we've got to figure things out. We got to get things done. And I just try to impart that on everyone else. You know, I want everyone around me happy, you know, living out their passion and their purpose in life as well. And if I can inspire that, I mean, I'm inspire them to do that. I'm very thankful to have that opportunity.
What kind of coach are you? Are you a hard coach? Are you a soft? I see you running up the hill with your athletes, running after them. What kind of coach is Coach Dunham?
Yeah. I would say that I'm a lead by example coach. I still work out, you know, 6-7 days a week. Part of my motivation to do that is because I have kids who are also student athletes, but I also have, you know, runners that they're looking at me and I want to lead by example. I'm also the type of coach that there's a lot of sports psychology involved. I don't force an athlete to do something. I get them to want to do it for themselves because, I mean, just those intrinsic rewards, it goes a lot farther than someone having to yell at you or you feeling like there's an extrinsic reward. Those rewards within yourself, you know, I mean, you might know where some of your medals and trophies are. I know you have a ton of them, but I mean, you're also those stories of those workouts that you completed and running those personal records and running against, you know, fierce competitors. Those are the things that you hold on to a lot tighter. I don't even know where most of my, you know, top awards are. I do have this one ribbon that I feel like was the impetus of me moving to a much more competitive high school runner. But that's a whole nother story. And that's where I completely bombed in a meet and I ended up having to take that ribbon and I hung it up next to my light switch after having my head down all day, all night. But that became my motivation that I didn't want to experience that again. And so that's what we're also talking about. How do we flip adversity? You know, that could actually be the fuel to us becoming who we are truly are, you know, and it's adversity that reveals it. You know, it reveals the character that's deep down inside in all of us. We all have we all have the power. We all have the tools. You know, it's just a matter of bringing it out and also having the right people around you to help you to bring it out. Yeah. And I always say, make sure you audit your circle because it's so important that you have the right people around you. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It could only be transferred. And if you have a lot of negativity around you, unfortunately, you're going to be that much farther away from living your dream, your passion, your purpose. But if you surround yourself around people who can appreciate you, they're going to bring energy to you, you know, when you need it the most, you're going to find yourself getting closer to those goals that you have. You know, iron sharpens iron. Yeah. And don't ever forget, misery loves company too. So be very careful.
Exactly. Now, it's very interesting to me. Now, you're a coach and you're spanning 20 years plus coaching. You and I came up in a time where, you know, you almost had to make it or it was, if you don't make it, that's it. It's a wrap. Yeah. So we had no choice but to make it. In today's society, the young people that you coach today, people always talk about this generation intergenerational shift. Do you see such a shift? Or in the young people that you coach today, do you see yourself in them? And how are you inspiring them to, because they got a lot more stuff to deal with than we do, than we did, sorry. How do you, I'm just curious, how do you keep that going?
Well, first of all, I have a 14 and 16 year old. So my wife and I have these conversations all the time. And that's real talk. I mean, it's not an easy job. And I think that that's where, I'm also the type of coach where I'm on the grind to become better each and every day. And whether that's studying the science of training energy systems, or whether that's, developing my student athletes mentally and emotionally and preparing them for the real world. There's this progression where I want to see my athletes become, better, definitely physically and physiologically, but I also want them to become better, mentally and mentally and emotionally. And I also want them to understand that that anything worth having in life is not going to come easy. And so I try to, shoot the warning shots so that they can, heed some of this, advice. But there's constant talks, discussions, lessons. Sports psychology is real. And so I'm always trying to just enhance my repertoire, and I have to change on a yearly basis as a coach, sometimes season to season. And because it's all about me connecting with my student athletes first, learning who they are, what makes them tick. And then that's part of my formula as a coach, because at the end of the day, I do want them to have the same grit and determination that we had, for them to feel like if they have a goal that it's not an option. I also do a lot of teaching around, it's not about you, it's not about me, it's all about we. And you just don't have that team camaraderie that you once had before. So, there's a lot of work that I put into on building that culture. Anyone who coaches, who I coach, they know that has to be the DNA of our program. You got to be tough. You got to be gritty. You can't be one of those folks who give up. Now, you may start there, don't get me wrong, but over 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to build you into this person that we could appreciate, having on the team when we grew up.
Yeah. So your athletes are coming to you in high school, right? Primarily.
Correct. Yes.
So tell us now about a little bit, because I'm looking at that Penn Relays plaque on the wall behind your head. You don't get one of those easily. That is a signet. That's a testimony to your coaching ability and the caliber of young people that have come through your program. But you're a teacher and a professor in the educational system. You're a coach for all these young people across the city. But this Kids Elite thing, how did this start? What is Kids Elite?
Okay, so Kids Elite is a sports camp that my wife and I, we started about 8 years ago. I always come up with these bright ideas. and I remember that the first year we started it, it completely bombed. We had to cancel it before because we just didn't get enough kids to register. So we lost some money. Then the second year we started it, we started with 10 kids. And now you fast forward and we're serving close to 1,000 kids during the summer. We have 4 different sites. And, the reason we started Kids Elite Sports Camp was we really felt like there was this high level of specialization that was happening in our area. We also felt like it was just too intense for, a kid who was 12 and under. And so we came up with this concept of diversification of sports. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, we believe in having very active kids and for them to be, at least on a semi-competitive level. So we're not warding off competition, but what we are saying is that that's not the most important thing initially. The most important thing is getting kids to love being active, learning how to do various sports that becomes transferable over. You know, our kids, with our camp in a 5-hour period, they'll take at least 14 to 20,000 steps because, I mean, we have this robust curriculum that they're following, and we get kids to really love it. And, you know, when you love something, well, I mean, what do? You're going to want to do it more. And that's where we, again, the sports psychology, the intentionality of putting this educational curriculum together with this sports curriculum. I mean, it has really blossomed into a dream come true, and we're still expanding. You know, we're getting to the point where we're going to be franchising a model as well. And so the other piece to it was, you know, I have a 14 and 16 year old, and as you know, college days are coming up, and the question was, how can I stay in this lane of still doing my, you know, serving my purpose, living my passion? And I never forget, you know, when I read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, and it started talking about the success of some of your most, you know, successful people, businesses, and, you know, this mastery level of 10,000 hours of expertise in a particular area. So this goal came up of mine of starting Kids Elite Sports Camp because we just didn't have the proper guidance for our young folks for sports. And it also, there's a ton of camps that, you know, they're doing things the wrong way. You know, we pay an arm and a leg for our own kids to attend the camp, and you walk in and counselors are on cell phones, and they really didn't have any takeaways for the day. And I mean, there just wasn't any growth and development. It was more babysitting. And I figured out with my expertise that, and also my wife is in education as well, and she's an administrator, and we just put something special together. And it was after I read Outliers that, you know, hey, I want to live in this area and, you know, monetize it a bit for the right reasons. And now this has given me, you know, just that additional financial support. So now I can continue to do more of what I do at a much higher level, and also have the comfort that I can take care of my family as well. And so Kids Elite just has been a true blessing to, you know, 8 years later for it. And we also stomached the pandemic as well. Super
excited. But I raise it because I'm following you on your various social media platforms, and I see the videos, and I see the joy and the bright spark in the eyes of the young people. And I asked you that question because you're a coach, you're an educator, you're doing this, you're a sports psychologist, but you're also a very successful coach in your own right.
Thank you.
National champion, cross-country championships, pen relays, all these kinds of things. So I'm going to ask you a question this way. You kind of tipped your hand a minute ago, but you mentioned franchising Kid Elite and all that. I think that's a great idea, by the way. What I see you doing, if you can make that happen across this nation, wow, our young people will be in a much better spot. So kudos to you and your wife on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
What is next for you as you look at our young people, you look at the work you and your wife are doing, and then you look at the challenges in societies? For example, we're coming out of this COVID and things are all out of kilter and things like that. So if you had a chance to sit with young people who are not your athletes or young people coming through Kids Elite, what would you say to them today to inspire them to know, look, you can make it? What would be your words of inspiration to them?
That's a great question. I think that I would end up telling them, you know, my story. As I, you know, mentioned before, you know, the speech impediment, you know, then you fast forward later, here it is. I do public speaking. I do, you know, coaching clinics, motivational talks, The dyslexia that played a major role in my, you know, educational experience. That was another reason that I wanted to write a book. And so, you know, just being able, as I said before, lead by example, where, you know, not only telling them, but I'm showing them that that the things that I'm asking them to do, I've either done it or I'm willing to do it myself. And I think, you know, you're also asking a question, where does this take me in the future? And, you know, I really just want to dive more into just becoming an even better coach, and also to see, you know, Kids Elite continue to grow. And I think that I do want to start another, you know, not sure if that's going to be a nonprofit or for-profit, but I would love to help to build more minority entrepreneurs. And so I'm kind of thinking about the life coach a bit, and I'm also thinking about, you know, how can I, you know, push that person who has 10,000 hours of expertise in an area to jump out there and take risk, you know, and it's one thing to have a business mindset, but it's a whole another thing to have an entrepreneurial mindset. And I know, you know, this as, you know, as you run your podcast and also, you know, writing your book as well, is just a whole different mindset. You know, I know it took you, you know, close to 8 years to write your, finish your book. And that's, that shows just that grit that you weren't going to, you know, you just weren't going to give up on it. And you know, there's that glowing stat that only 2% of writers actually complete their manuscript. And that's real talk. And out of that 2%, only 6 to 8% are people of color. And so that's the other thing that, you know, just want to lead by example, to inspire others. I'm thankful that, you know, Under Armour has picked me up as of 2 years ago, where and things are slow now, but because of the pandemic, but I'm also an Under Armour coaching ambassador. So I plan on just doing a lot on a middle school and high school level in terms of public speaking, motivational talks. You know, the book Running Against the Odds also has a teacher's guide, along with discussion questions that can be used for an ELA curriculum for eighth grade and up. And so, I mean, I'm for real, man. I want this to be required reading for, you know, a lot of your middle and high schools, and so that they can start to see, you know, more, you know, Black authors.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your book, because we have about, see, I told you the hour is going to run by very quickly. We have about 7 minutes, 7 or 8 minutes left. But tell us about your book. Where can they find it? Okay. How can they support you? Because I've seen, I had that session with some of our track partners that we had that call one night. But, you know, I see the excitement. I see your marketing team at work. Pretty impressive stuff.
No, but thank you.
Let
I
us know how
that.
We can get your book and how can we help you? How can we support you?
Yeah, I mean, so the book will be released on Amazon September 30th. And so if this, you know, releases before then, I mean, you can always follow me on Instagram at Coach Dez Dunham. On IG, and we'll be keeping you updated in terms of the book release there. That's Coach Dez Dunham. And, you know, the book is just, again, a chronicle of my journey through life, childhood, college days, and then it culminates with college days. And so the finale story is the classic David versus Goliath with my 2007 Eleanor Roosevelt team versus the Jamaicans.
Yeah, I remember.
and so we enter that meet where and we're starting off the 4x8, and the Jamaican team had won 19 out of the last 20 4x8s. And so it's a really neat David and Goliath story. I mean, it's a slugfest back and forth, you know, and so I think, you know, runners and non-runners can have a lot of appreciation for you know, that final chapter.
Yeah, I remember. So one of the things I also do with my guests, because believe it or not, Des, before we run out of time, I want to say this to you. And this podcast, you know, I'm not a media person. I didn't go to journalism school. I'm an accountant that wrote a book, and a pandemic hit, and can't do a book tour. So as fate would have it, a podcast that I used to be a guest on, the producers asked me to create my own podcast. Now,
wow.
That's
wow.
The David and Goliath story. Yeah, and here right. I am, about 52 episodes later. But I say,
oh my goodness, wow.
To share this thought is that when I look at what you have accomplished and I look at how you've accomplished it, you have a calling because you are playing in a space where our young people today need more motivation, guidance, structure, atmosphere for them to feel like they belong, for them to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that to you and your wife, that just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Because you are making a difference. And before we got on the air, I was telling you that I follow your IG posts, I follow your Facebook posts, I watch your videos. And I sit there and I say to myself, as I look at the young people in those videos, all I see is pure, unadulterated confidence.
Wow.
And that's what our young people today need. They need, you could see it in their eyes. You could see it in them doing the drills. So before we get off this podcast, I just wanted to share that with you. And that's one of the reasons why, as I told you, someone, at least three people said to me, when are you going to have Coach Des on? Well, my brother, you're on
oh, wow.
today.
Oh, man.
You're on today.
Hey, so thank you.
Yeah. The last question I was going to ask you is that it closed out with an open-ended question. If you were given the opportunity to be a super coach for any team, Olympic team, high school, college, whatever it may be. I'm going to lean on you for like a pastoral emphasis, if you will. And you had no druthers. What would you say to the people that you're coaching in terms of where we are today and where you would want to take them?
All right. So let me understand this question correctly now. All right. So you're asking basically, if I can coach anywhere.
Anywhere.
Okay.
Any level. What would you be saying as you look at the landscape today and where you would want to take them?
Yeah. I mean, I to be honest, I'm right where I want to be, you know, right where I love to be. And, you know, something else was that I coach at Maryland on a collegiate level. We were in the ACC. It was big time. I thought that's where I wanted to land. And that's going to be part of the probably my third book where I just I tell this story of where, I mean, to be honest with you, I was chasing this career and I was defining myself with this career. And that led to some depressing moments. And I realized that I want to be where I'm planting the seeds. And so Kids Elite gives me the best, you know, opportunity with the younger, you know, side of 4 through 12 year olds. And then, I mean, I just absolutely love the high school program and kids that I'm working with today. And I mean, you expect us to do some really, really big things. Expect to see us at Penn Relays in the next 2 or 3 years as well. And so, yeah, I'm ecstatic, you know, where I am. My daughter just entered high school. We'll see if she runs. I don't think that she would be a fan if I didn't finish at the high school that I'm currently with. But yeah, I absolutely love coaching at St. John's, and I'm looking forward to, you know, the future with the team that I have.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you, sir. Any last words that you'd like to leave with the guests of this podcast? Because I could tell you that I'm going to get some calls from some grandparents and some mothers on this one. Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave that we didn't come up with by way of conversation?
Hey, I just wanted to say I really appreciate you having me on. Anytime we can, you know, talk about just giving other people, you know, that energy, that passion, that purpose in life, to remind people sometimes that that they have to just do a check to ask themselves, are they where they want to be? And what do they need to give up now to get ahead? What do they need to do to sacrifice now? And sometimes you just got to give up who you are for who you want to be. And I see what you're doing. I love what you're doing. And I'm just thankful to be a part of it. And I hope that I've sparked some thinking for someone who's listening today, for them to, you know, just do an audit of where they are and who's around them and where they want to be later on in life.
Well, my brother, I'll tell you this much. You have sparked a lot. And your story alone from Gary, Indiana, and dyslexia and all the things that you've had to overcome, your witness and your testimony is powerful, my brother. I did not know these things. And I'm sure a couple of our track brothers and sisters are going to say, wow.
Yeah,
we did not know that. So that's what this podcast is about, allowing people to see others and the authenticity of who they are. Well, all right, my brother. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from my good friend and former teammate, Coach Desmond Dunham, who is doing outstanding things in trying to shape and mold and guide so many young people. Over 1,000 young people, if you heard that right. Just think, 1,000 can turn into 10,000, and it could be these concentric circles that go out. And that's what he and his lovely wife are doing, plus all the other things they do on a regular and consistent basis. I hope something was shared here today that will pique your interest and have you do, as Coach Des says, audit everything that's around you and look for those bright sparks that will push you to something new. So until next time, this is It's Easy Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. Until next time, take care and be safe. Peace.